Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and welcome to episode number 21 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, the podcast designed to help smart business owners with an interest in innovation and the Internet of Things become even more innovative. Yes, we're at episode 21, so we're grown up now, the adult age. Now, in this episode, it's my great privilege to welcome internet marketing guru and entrepreneur James Schramko of Superfast Business. Now, James not only very generously shared an hour of his time with us today, but also his insights, particularly into the ideal subscription business model, as well as designing your business around the lifestyle that you want. This is a fascinating episode, and I learned an awful lot from interviewing James, and I hope that you will too. The podcast, of course, is sponsored by InnovaBiz, where we help smart, innovative business owners save time and money and grow their business through making their websites achieve more. Of course, at InnovaBiz, we do more than just build websites. We provide solutions to our clients' needs by leveraging the power of internet in innovative ways. So you can learn more about that by visiting our website at innovabiz.com.au. Or if you want to talk to me directly, of course, you can find all the contact information there. Now, before we meet James, a quick competition announcement. This week's prize is a copy of The Automatic Customer by John Warrilow. This book is around the subscription business. So today, subscription businesses are not limited just to newspapers and magazines, as in the past. And Warrilow's book talks about the secret to finding and keeping those automatic customers, as he calls them. So stick around for details on how you can enter the draw to win that prize later on in the interview. Without further ado now, let's get into the Innovation Hive and get the buzz from James Schramko.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have here with me today on the InnovaBuzz podcast. I think we're at episode 21, so officially we've reached adulthood status. James Schramko from Sydney, Australia. So James is an internet marketing guru, probably well known to most of our audience. He's also a podcaster, and he's the owner of Superfast Business. So James, welcome to the podcast. It's a privilege to have you here.
Thanks for inviting me, Jürgen.
Yeah, now I've just been telling James I've been a follower of his since probably around about early 2007, because I saw him present at an internet marketing conference that I attended there very early on when I started my business, and it's been interesting to see how his business has evolved over that time. There's certainly been massive growth in his business, and he'll tell us a little bit about that today, I'm sure. But before we learn more about James and his business, I wanted to announce our competition for today. I'm going to explore a little bit with James today the recurring revenue model, or the subscription model. And I thought an appropriate prize would be a recent publication book by John Warrilow called The Automatic Customer. So in that book, John gives a lot of pointers on how to find and keep subscription customers and build that ongoing revenue model. James talks a lot about that in his latest podcast. So if you go and have a look at or listen to his podcast at superfastbusiness.com, then you'll get James's perspective on that as well. And I hope to explore that a little bit more today.
We'll also get an interview with John Warrilow on my podcast.
Yes, so I believe. I haven't caught up with that one, but you did mention, you did refer to it. Yeah, that's great. All right, so before we start talking about all things internet marketing and what you've been doing in business, I am fascinated by the transition you've made. So you were a senior executive in a Mercedes-Benz dealership in Sydney in your previous life, if you like, and the transition of that to an internet marketer. So tell us a little bit about that, and also what were the lessons you kind of brought from that and learnt along the way?
Well, it was really quite a big move to go from a salaried employee to a business owner and entrepreneur. It was there was many lessons, still learning lessons. But I more or less replicated the role that I was doing, which was the general manager's role, except this time for my own business and without some of the headaches of a traditional business, which is having land, staff in one building, like logistical issues, and stock. Of course, we had tens of millions of dollars worth of stock. So by opening up the geographic landscape, being able to source employees from anywhere and to sell to anywhere, that was a big change. Owning a business meant that I was now getting paid by thousands of different people, which is way better than getting paid by one person. And the ownership aspect is a lot more fulfilling. I feel like I'm building something for myself that lasts beyond the next paycheck. So it was a good transition. It was a very ambitious transition. I had set a break-even point of being able to match my salary before I stepped away. It was fairly difficult because my salary was high and my obligations in terms of financial commitments and family to support were also very high. So I had to really make my business online work well. And as a result, I think it helped me get a lot of the vital skills that I needed that translate in either offline or the online world, but I was able to sort of prove which things work best and refine as I go.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to explore that actually a little bit later too, when we talk about in terms of how much work you put in terms of exploring what worked and launching products and then getting customers on board before you did a huge investment and figured out what worked. So how long did you actually do the two roles?
I think it was about 2.5 years.
Okay,
I registered my first domain in the end of 2005, and I think I quit in about 2008. So I probably saw you in 2009, more likely.
Could be.
And once I swapped over, then that was really a big change because I was really burning the midnight oil at home. You know, 9:30 till 3 a.m. shift, and then running a 70-something staff, $50 million a year business by day. You can only burn the candle so bright for so long before it starts to get burnt out. So I theorized that by getting rid of 50 or 60 hours a week of working in someone else's business, it might let me focus better on my own business. And so one of the big lessons in that is focusing your attention in the one spot, you undoubtedly get a better result. And one of the first things I did was replace going to work with sleeping in and, you know, just resting. So I was pretty much still working every night, but I just didn't work as much during the day anymore.
Yeah. And I'm sure the work that you did do on your own business then was a lot more effective as a result.
And that's true even today. The work that I do on my business is extremely effective. I'd select how many hours I want to allocate to my business in a week. And in those times when I'm focused on my business, like right now, then that's all I do. I'm fully immersed in it and I'm not doing anything else. And I think having strong partitions is actually something that took me a little while to figure out, especially when I first became an entrepreneur. I thought that that meant I don't have to have partitions or barriers, but it does tend to consume every aspect of your life because it's an unlimited business model. There's absolutely no defining barrier. It's not like working in a government department where you clock off, you are on 24/7. So it takes a lot of discipline to craft a routine and to maximize how effective you can be in the time that you want to spend on your business. And that's a big part of what I'm helping business owners with these days, is helping them transition from their raw creativity and their energy and their aspirations and their goals and their requirements to support families, but to get the best possible result out of the effort that they're putting into that without losing it all on the sides.
Yeah, that's a really good point, isn't it? And I think you talk somewhere about crafting the life that you want, which, you know, is, like you say, it's about finding that balance of business and personal life.
Yeah, I think you can definitely design the outcome you want if you know what that is. And so time to put some thought into it is well reciprocated with, you know, a reflective situation that you've created. And I think some people don't realize they can create their own situation. They feel beholden to a machine or layers and layers of compromise, whether it's mortgage debt, whether it's family values that have been pushed upon them. I mean, in some cultures, they still tell you who you have to marry and stuff. yeah. But a lot of cultures, they tell the kids, you know, with good outcomes in mind, they're trying to tell the kids how they're going to be educated and what job they'll do and what the, you know, they're selling them this idea of what a good life is, but I highly doubt that that is a good life. And I think we have a lot more ability to create what we want than what people would have us believe.
Mm. All right. Well, that's a good segue. You mentioned, you know, how you help business owners with that work-life balance type of thing. So tell us briefly, what do you do, or what do your businesses do?
There's a few different categories. The one that I started with and that I still do today is I recommend things to people that I think are good solutions. So I consider myself a problem solver. Mm. And when I solve a problem, then people around me trust me and they'd like to know how I solved it. And if there's tools involved, then I'll recommend those. So that's classified as the affiliate marketing business. And a lot of businesses can make affiliate revenue as an aside business. And that's really what it is for me now. But my aside business still generates hundreds of thousands of dollars in profit. My core business is split between two major divisions. One is done-for-you services, and specifically we build WordPress websites for people, and we do search engine optimization and content marketing for customers. And that's people who want to spend the money and get the result. The other side of the business is more of a consulting, do-it-yourself side of the business. So I have two forums that I am actively engaged in. Let's call it a lower price one, which is called Super Fast Business. Mm-hmm. And in there, there's hundreds and hundreds of members who are helping each other, and I'm helping. And they share information, and they increase their combined intelligence, and they have that support network to help each other. And the high-level one, I'm much more like a silent partner in the business, where I'm more like the board of directors and helping with strategic decisions and habit forming and taking people through the stages of growth that invariably happen between making your first $100,000 or $200,000, taking that up past seven figures and then often into the eight-figure mark. So I particularly help people go from, say, $500,000 a year to a couple of $1 million a year in sales revenue, because a lot of things change from the first $100,000 or $200,000 to making a few $1 million. So a lot has to be different than what got you to that first stage.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It often involves capacity.
Mm. Okay, that's fascinating. So I'm interested to explore a little bit more the idea, because I know you talk about it in some of your blog posts and podcasts, the idea of community and the forum that you have, and, you know, the concept of mastermind, people helping one another and basically them producing the content on there, but also giving you the feedback to what problems or issues that they might have, where you can then, you know, produce new products or new information that adds more value to them.
Yeah, so a community subscription membership is a good business model if you have a nurturing sort of a attitude. So as a parent of four kids, I would consider having a membership community like being a parent.
Yeah.
You have to bring it into the world. It's a lot of work up front, can be messy in the beginning. It's demanding on you. You really have to be omnipresent until you can get it matured enough with established culture and some support mechanisms in place to take some of the heavy load off. And then as it grows up, it really, you can, you know, change with it. You can watch your community or cohort upgrade, and you can upgrade with them. And so the stuff we're doing now is very different than what we're doing 6 or 7 years ago in the community. And it's great to see it grow up and adapt to the market. So you really have to be extremely comfortable with change. Mm-hmm. You have to be fair and strong, and you have to be responsible to run a community. If you can do it, though, it's a very profitable business model. And the idea that you can have people who want to stick around, much like your internet service provider, whatever you're using to broadcast this on, you probably pay a recurring subscription, and maybe Netflix on your TV. You know, if you want to keep those services on board and you're happy with them, then it's profitable for whoever supplies them. So I like the business model. It makes a lot of sense to deliver information. If you are an information marketer or an author or an expert in your field, then it's a great place to put your information in video or audio or text format, and then to let people in there where they can ask questions around it and develop their execution of that information with your help in real time. So you're combining content, you're combining coaching, and of course the community, which people don't really value when they come in. But if you've ever been to a school camp, or you go to church on Sundays, or you're a member of an association or a club, you know what that community aspect is like. And this is one where you don't have to break up. You don't have to have that last day of summer camp where everyone goes back home. It can last forever if you want. Mm. And being an entrepreneur could be isolating for some people. If you're not used to being by yourself or making tough decisions, or you don't know where all the good resources are, then a community is going to be very helpful for you. And the strange aspect to this is that I've posted more than anyone in the community, and no doubt I've learnt the most of any of the students just from being there every day, answering questions and observing the conversation. So I usually find out stuff that's happening from my own members. So this idea of user-generated content is phenomenal.
Yeah.
If you were to think of it like a paid CRM campaign, imagine you can have your best customers pay you to stay in touch with them every day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fascinating analogy. So the I like the idea also of, you know, you as the person posting the most, or as the person, the father of it, if you like, to use your family children analogy, are learning the most because you're actually helping people. So I think, you know, the whole concept of masterminds is around, you know, if you get involved and you contribute to other people's problems and you give advice to other people, you actually learn a lot, because what you find is that that problem is not all that far remote from one that you might be facing yourself.
Well, you get people asking questions that help people answer a question they didn't know to ask. That's good. It's that really comes from the Johari window of the quadrant of what others know but you don't know. And that's a good thing from a membership. I think we have to define the word mastermind, because I would see it as something slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because when it was originally coined, and I think it was by Andrew Carnegie, it was really around him assembling a group of people to help him with his problems.
Yeah.
So the most power of a mastermind is when everyone's directed all of their resources at one person. Mm. And the Silver Circle program that I have is a lot more like that. It's more of a small group, and it's one person at a time, mm-hmm, having their challenge addressed, not just by me, but by other members. And so you get peer-to-peer leverage in that scenario, because you've got high-level people who are very well filtered, all being exposed to high-level contacts and high-level solutions, so they can rapidly share them between each other.
Mm.
But we do run a monthly live mastermind in Superfast Business as well, where we field questions that members put up, and I answer every single question that they ask me on that call. So it's a category-based training delivery where we do cover the core things that we should be covering, and I usually give one good example or tip in each category, but I also field every question that can be thrown at it so someone can insert their own problem related to that category in the appropriate section.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fascinating. Yeah. I take your point on the mastermind. It is, it is focused on one person's issue or problems, and I guess the experience I've had in groups is where you share it around, like it sounds like you're doing in Superfast Business. So, yeah.
It's fascinating to me when someone asks a question, they'll get a flood of responses very quickly from people mm-hmm. who know the answers. So it's kind of like a magic box where you can just put any challenge in there and someone will know the answer. And it can be anything online related. It could be, who's a good supplier for Google AdWords, or where do I get graphic designs done, or which shopping cart system should I use if I'm doing e-commerce with 1,000 plus SKU items and I need to have SEO flexibility for the item descriptor. And if someone will know the answer, because there's hundreds and hundreds of members from all around the world. So it's happening 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Like when we're asleep in Australia, the UK mob are very active, and then and the US, the North America scene is good, and we've got members in Dubai and New Zealand and Europe as well. So it's really a global forum, which is fantastic.
Mm. Yeah, I mean that's one of the big things, isn't that the power of the internet today? I'm talking to some people in Poland right now in terms of a partnership, and the idea of doing work that, you know, a project can be actually actively worked on 24 hours because you're cycling it through different time zones, and just fascinating. And
it is.
Yeah.
It's like a giant jigsaw puzzle.
That's right, yeah. All right, so what would you see as some of the keys to running a successful subscription business model?
Well, I think when you make your offer, you have to think of something that people would miss if they don't have it anymore. So a lot of people sell their subscriptions the wrong way. I'd say that they are sort of hoping for a one-time sale and that someone might forget they're a member and keep paying accidentally. You've got to think about what is an ongoing challenge that your audience has that you could solve, because that's really the key to it, and matching the expectations that when people come in, that they're going to be actually surprised when they get there, that it's even better than what they thought. So I tend to undersell a little bit. I'm a conservative offer maker. Don't do any wild or outrageous triple your money back guarantees and stuff. I'm not trying to hook people in on excitement and hope they stick around. You've just got to try and really understand your customer and give them a solution that's going to help them for the longest time possible. And then you have to set it up in a way that makes sense for you and for the customer. So sometimes these things are a bit out of whack. If it's too good for the customer, it's going to really grind you to the bone. If it's too good for you, then the customer's not going to stick around because they don't see the value. So you've got to come up with the way that you deliver your solutions. And a lot of people think that a membership is all about having a lot of content. But most of the memberships I've started, there's no content. So if you don't fall for that red flag, you're off to a good start. So don't think of it just as content. Think of it more as a subscription that solves an ongoing problem. And that could be anything from a software service provision to, you know, a box of fruit coming to your house once a week. You know, there's subscription business models everywhere you look. Just think about, what do people do often, and how could you organize that into a better deal for them where they can have predictable and reliable delivery of that solution for an agreed upon amount, and you get predictable and reliable income in exchange for that.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. And like you say, a lot of, well, probably most people fall into the trap of trying to load content first and then saying, okay,
it's the number one question I get. How much stuff do I have to put in there before I can open? And I say, you don't need any stuff. And then they scratch their head and, okay, explain that. But that's not why people are joining. Because let's face it, if I mailed you my back catalogue of the last 10 events that I've run, which is say 30 days worth of recordings, when would you actually watch that?
That's right.
You know, you could have the same information that I am aware of by selectively picking the things that are relevant to you. So I give someone access to my entire back catalog of recordings in the community, but doesn't mean they need to watch all of them. I used a supermarket analogy for this. When we go to the supermarket, we don't buy everything that's in the supermarket. We just get the things we need today or for the next few days. So we need to teach people how to help themselves better and how to get the best value from the subscription. So that would be another reason that your subscription will be successful, is that you're onboarding people properly and helping them know how to get the best value from the solution that you provide.
Okay, yeah, that's fascinating, yeah. And also, I mean, there's an element there, isn't there, of the lean startup philosophy. So rather than, you know, build an entire structure that may be off the mark, build the minimal framework and get some customers and test it out.
Yeah, and it's so easy to do these days. You can have a landing page with an offer on it, asking people to vote with their wallet, or even prior to that, a waiting list. You don't need to build anything else. You don't even need to own a domain. I mean, literally, you just need a landing page that any number of suppliers can provide that has an offer on it, and ask people to do something that will cause them to vote with an action or an inaction, helping you understand if this is relevant or not. So most of the things I start are minimum viable products, because I don't like waste and I don't want to put an enormous amount of effort into something that I just think is a good idea. I want to have something that people think is a good solution and that they're prepared to pay for.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good advice. And I probably signed up for three things today that were, you know, announcements about some pending launch or something, and it was basically give us your email and we'll keep you posted as to when we launch. So that, you know, that pretty clearly builds a list of people that are interested in whatever the offer is before they might even have the product.
Yeah, and you might be part of a launch campaign, which is another problem that a subscription business solves. These info marketers who sell their once a year $2,000 products, they get tired. Their income spikes. They have a lot of refunds. They have to give a lot of prizes. They've got to hype people up. They've got to be on the phone, you know, convincing people to mail for them. It's hard work. Whereas if they just set up their delivery system as a subscription service, they could have the same customer for the next 6 or 7 years without having to keep reselling them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great advice. Now, I know that you're very strong on systems and processes. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I guess with, you know, these sort of businesses, it's really important to make sure that you've got systems and processes in place that mean you're not burning out, as you put it before. You're not, you know, the demand on you as the business owner is not too onerous.
Yeah, well, if you need to be present for everything to happen, there's no leverage in the business at all. So the system, I like the acronym, saves you stress, time, energy, and money. So that being the case, it makes sense to have systems. When you have teams, it's very easy to have standard operating procedures or checklists that people follow so that you have flawless delivery of services and reducing errors. That you can automate many things that people do manually, just have recurring reminders, you can have scheduling tools, you can have all sorts of things, email systems that send particular emails based on behavioral actions when someone's in a certain part of your website. These things are all great systems that free up you so that you're not, you know, manually having to do everything, because it gets tiring. And we probably all start like that, where we do everything in the company. The faster you can get a mindset around outsourcing things to systems or deleting them or not even doing the things is the best one. That's my favorite one of all. Yeah. It's just crossing something off a list because it's not even that important. There's only a few things that are important and the rest of it is not important. And we should just, like Peter Drucker said, nothing so useless as doing efficiently that which should not be done at all. Absolutely. Something to that effect. Yeah. And I really like that one. You've sort of come across the idea of a Pareto principle and the 80-20. So of all the things that are going on in a business, probably a lot of them aren't important anyway. And the ones that are important, you'll want to map them out into a linear step-by-step process, and then you'll get rid of it off your plate to either a machine or a person who can human automate something. And then you step back into the layer of checking and auditing that process, and then you hire for that role, and then you step back into the layer of business owner. And that's where the real value is for you and for the business.
Yeah, and of course, like you said earlier, you know, getting involved in that forum and doing the personal relationships and you know, your premium service, where obviously your personal contribution is a lot more important.
I think it's definitely a source of value for the members, and I believe it could be actually outsourced or leveraged. And I've done it before as a test in Silver Circle. Several years ago, I closed it for 6 months and had two masterclasses instead with other experts who I featured as the expert. And I just stepped back and I had someone else in my team recording the webinars. And my role was really just to sell tickets and to split the profits. And I was able to leverage the business that way. But if you do want to participate in it, which I do, because I get a lot of good information from participating in my own forum, spending a half an hour a day in there is a better use of my time than editing a podcast or transcribing an audio or illustrating something. They're all skills that anyone else could do better than I can. And I mean just about anyone else. So big waste of my time. And learning to let go of stuff that we're not great at is pretty tough for people, especially when they proffer excuses like they don't have any money or no one else can do it as good as I can.
Yeah, I was just going to say
they're all silly excuses when you think about it. I've found many talented people who are extremely good at things that I'm pretty ordinary at.
I've actually just before we came on this podcast, I just recorded a video of doing something for one of my clients, and I thought I should actually record this because I've actually got a rule that says, you know, I'll do something once or twice so I understand how it's done, and then I'll record a video and do it the third time to give to one of my people to transcribe it into a full documented process and then get somebody else to do it. And so I realized that I had a backlog of tasks built up that I hadn't done the task myself because it's kind of below the importance level, but also hadn't documented anything so that they could actually get done. So I've sort of put onto my action list a daily recurring task now of documenting two processes per day, every day. So it's just going to be a short 5-minute video of something. So, you know, and over time that's going to start to get tasks into our system and off my plate, but they'll still get done.
And the easiest way to solve this is to book a 6-week holiday around Europe or somewhere in the tropics and just see what breaks while you're away. What doesn't happen, what fails, what falls over, what emerges to the surface. All the things you don't want to ever have to do again.
Yeah, that's right, in fact, I've just come back from a 4-week holiday in San Francisco and more or less was hands off the business for that entire time. So, and it is surprising. I mean, we do have a lot of systems and processes in place, and we've done a lot of homework to get to that point, but even so, it was still a scary thought, and it's surprising how little actually broke. In fact, nothing
broke. It kind of backs up my point that a lot of the things that we think are important probably aren't.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, I see my role in my business really as building the relationships with my clients and doing the research, like you said earlier, research, and I love doing the research, solving problems, finding innovative solutions to problems, and then, you know, getting those into systems so that other people can do them. Either my clients can do them themselves or, you know, my team can then do them by process.
I'm looking for a poster of W. Edwards Deming on your back wall there.
Yeah, I've pulled down the blinds in front of the messy bookshelf. So, All right. So what do you see as the biggest challenges then in running your group of business, and what are you doing about that?
I don't really have any challenges at the moment. I'm specialized in helping other people with theirs and I lead by example.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of my highest level group customers are attracted to my program because they see that I'm actually doing it and I'm living the life on my terms with less compromise. And for example, I surf every day. I have no debt. My business is 7-figure profit per year. I have good relationships with my customers and my team. I'm doing the things I enjoy, and they want that too in their business. So I would say if I find challenges, I'm pretty quick to address them. I'll like sledgehammer them. And I've built the business to a point now, and with the benefit of time, I am coming up near 10 years to that first domain registration. I've been able to knock a lot of chinks out of the armor and build in redundancy and drop off things that I don't like and only keep the things that I love. So I don't really have any big challenges. My next event in March next year is already covered its costs. Yeah. And I'm feeling in a good spot business-wise and life-wise. So.
Yeah. I know you talk a lot in your blog posts and your podcasts about focus and paring things away that, you know, might be distracting, even to the point of, you know, parts of the business.
Definitely. Yeah, you want to, sometimes we go broad. Greg McKeon talks about the paradox of success. And it's quite true. Like if you systemize and sort out one part of your business or your life, then you've created this new sort of neutral factor. And then it's very tempting to start getting busy again and to take on more stuff.
Yeah.
So I think one of the great disciplines is actually keeping simple and streamlining things and resisting that urge to fatten them up again. Like if we pare back our wardrobe, it's not long till we start buying new clothes and get it back. So what we need to really do is adjust our tempo or our habit or our routine around how that happened. A classic example of that for most people that they can relate to is their inbox. I would say your inbox is a good reflection on your approach to acquiring, sorting, sifting, storing, analyzing and prioritizing things in general. And most people are out of control with their inbox because they don't realize that it's a to-do list that other people get to add items to. So you've got to be very careful who you let in your inbox. And I've created a lot of systems around keeping that one empty. And I don't think most entrepreneurs are tapping their full potential because they're stuck in their inbox. And you'd be alarmed at how many hours a week. I would tell you, be extremely rare for someone to be spending any less than 10 hours a week in their inbox. And it's more likely they're spending 15 to 20 if they're out of control. And that's alarming.
It is, yeah.
It really, there's no reason for that to be the case. But that will reflect across their life. I bet you go into the same person's wardrobe, garage, tax returns, paperwork. It's all going to be reflective of that state. So I think that's the real skill. And it's where I help people with the basic stuff like getting enough sleep, eating properly, clearing their inbox, and getting all the tasks off their desk that they're just feeling overwhelmed with is really the key to progress in the business.
Yeah, that's fascinating, and it's great advice, obviously, because there's so many people that complain about email taking over. In fact, I met with a guy today that said, you know, can you set me up with a different email system because I've got all these emails in spam and half of them are important, and then my inbox is full of emails and I miss emails that are important, and there's all this other stuff in there that's not important. And so I said, well, yeah, we can build a system that will help that, but there's a whole philosophy around it as well. So
it's definitely a mindset.
It is.
It's like really like a lotto winner who will blow all the cash because they're not used to having all the money. when you declare email bankruptcy, that's not the end of the problem, because you'll recreate the problem again unless you adjust the reason why it happened in the first place.
Yeah. I have this fabulous thing. I don't know if you know SaneBox. It's a really neat tool to put into your email system, and you can train over time which folder emails go to, so you don't have to actually sort them yourself. So I've trained 90% of my emails to go into a read later folder. I've just increased that system a little bit. I've added a not important folder to that, and that not important folder, I go in there once a day and I select all delete. Once a week I go in there and I figure, okay, which ones, and I've got a black hole folder, which is kind of a bulk unsubscribe. Once a week I go into that not important ones and start to dump them into the unsubscribe, and that sort of gets rid of a lot of that stuff. My inbox itself maybe gets 20 emails a day, new ones, and a lot of those are from my team giving me my daily report, daily update of what they've done, so I've got to answer those. So usually 20 is one I can manage within about a half an hour. I can usually go back and I follow the philosophy of, I either delete it, delegate it, do it if it's less than a couple of minutes work, or I defer it to a time when I choose, so that, I turn it into an action and get it out of the inbox.
So you're farting. File it, action it, reply, or terminate or something.
Okay, yeah.
But I think you use the magic word train, whatever system you use. Unfortunately, a lot of people are hooked onto Outlook, which really sucks because of the folder system.
Yeah.
Got to get onto Gmail or Google apps because of the labels and the rules are so powerful. And the searchability means you don't have to worry about folders.
I used to use Outlook for folders. When I first started my business, we used to use Lotus Notes in my corporate life, and that sucked really badly. So I thought, when I got to Outlook, I thought, oh, this is great. And I'd have this complicated folder structure set up. And so I'd read an email and I thought, I want to hang on to that email. I want to keep that for later reference. So I'd spend, 30 seconds, 60 seconds, maybe 90 seconds thinking, now where should I file that so I can find it later on? Made a decision, filed it away. And then, of course, inevitably a week later or something, when I went to search for that, I could never remember where I'd filed it. And so I spent, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, sometimes half an hour trying to find it. And the search function in Outlook's horrible. And eventually I gave up and I went to Gmail. I don't have any folders now except the automatic ones that are set up. Everything else just gets archived and I do a search. And like you say, it's a...
Well, their search algorithm's pretty good.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't need any tools or add-ons once you've got it trained and once you've got a good system around it. I actually created a course and put it in my membership for members called Inbox Relief.
Okay.
And another one of my mastermind students did another inbox course as well, and he's like a Google Apps trainer and specialist. So
I'll have to post links to those.
Today I had no emails in my inbox. Very importantly too, you can get your team's emails out of your inbox by using Slack. And that also gets you off Skype. That's why I didn't find your invitation until just prior to the call, because I don't have Skype on. Having Skype on is a massive distraction, as is having your inbox bombarded. So if you can move your team to Slack, then you don't have to have your inbox or your Skype on anymore,
which is
huge.
I'm finding a little bit of resistance with the team to going to Slack. I haven't quite worked out the real reason for that. I have probably 6 months now I turn off Skype. I only turn it on when I use it. I don't have it on all the time. The Slack, I need to push a little bit more on that.
Well, I just gave them all an account. I said, let's try this. And then we just switched off Skype and email. And now they send their reports in Slack. And they love it. I love it. And the best thing is, we have about 43 people in our business. So that's 43 people not being hit up by birthday notifications and crap every day. Even on some of their Skype things, it says, I'm on Slack now.
Yeah.
So it is good to get off the grid, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great advice. And I love Slack, actually. I've just participated in a global Genesis Camp conference with the WordPress community over this weekend, and the whole thing was organized through Slack, and all the speakers were coordinated through Slack, and you know, the links to jump on when you were doing your presentations and everything, the whole thing was through Slack, and there's a whole community there now, which is great. Yeah.
Nice.
Mm. All right, well, it might be time to go on to our buzz, as I call it, which is the innovation round designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, and hopefully they'll get some really inspiring tips from your experience. So I'll ask a series of five questions and hopefully you'll have a real snappy answer for us.
Feels like a game show. Go for it. I've got my buzz right, already.
Well, what do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Question everything.
Question everything. Yeah, that's great advice. Yeah. Curiosity. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
Be comfortable with change. I use a scamper technique as well.
Can you outline that for us? I have heard of it, but it's sort of not front of mind at the moment.
I don't remember what the acronym stands for, but it's pretty much you reverse things, you replace things, you mutate,
morph.
You can look it up. It's all on Wikipedia.
Yeah. It's a little bit like some of DeBono's creativity tools.
Yeah, I heard about it a long time ago. And yeah. The other one I like is L.A. Goldratt's theory of constraints. Yeah. And the main exercise is removing assumptions. Yeah. And sort of, it's not far related from question everything, but if you're single source dependent on something, then I put a line through it and I say, you can no longer have it. Now what do you do?
Yeah.
So it's removing things,
okay,
and seeing what would you do then? And quite often you could do the second and third answer as well as the first thing without having to miss out on it. That's how I protected my business from massive failure.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. So do you have a favorite tool or a system for, well, we've talked about a little bit on email, but improving productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
Yeah, just to spend time away from the computer.
Yeah,
I know that sounds so obvious, but I think people are just sitting on Facebook all day, and it's sad.
Mm.
You know, I go analog. So when I go to the coffee shop, I don't take my computer or my phone. When I go surfing, I don't even wear a watch.
Yeah.
Partly because it looks like a fish scale and I'll get eaten. But also, I don't want to be beholden to time. So I think the more time I've had away from the computer, the more acuity I've built for my time on the computer.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. Yeah, I've actually
Take tech to the bedroom.
Yeah,
like just have a stop time as well.
Yeah,
like no matter what, when you reach that time, walk away from the computer. You're done for the day. Yeah. No amount of justification of having a late night will fix tomorrow morning's hangover. You better to park it where you're at. Write down your latest thing where your mind was at on a whiteboard or something, and then pick it up in the morning when you're fresh.
Yeah, that's fabulous advice. And I've just, probably 6 months ago, I started doing this. I run three computers in my office, and I've programmed them to shut down at a certain time.
We should get rid of two of them.
Yeah.
I've done that.
A lot of screens. But yeah.
Nothing like having one computer.
Yeah.
And one screen. I just got a 13-inch MacBook Pro on an Air stand, and a mouse and a keyboard. Much more effective having a single screen now.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, I'll have to think about that. But I've got mine programmed to automatically shut down at a certain time. They give me 5 minutes notice. So I do what you say. I sort of make notes about where I'm at, save the things that need to be saved, and then it'll shut down. And just, as you say, there's no excuse at that time. That's the end of the day. And then
it's like operating a forklift drunk. I mean, who hasn't bought domains at 2 a.m? and they're shockers.
Yeah.
You know, so we can learn from that.
Yeah. All right. Now, what's the best way to what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track? But I might switch this one around. And what's the best way to keep yourself as a business owner on track?
I think have 12 weekly reviews of yourself so that you can measure progress, like what have you done well, what wins have you had, and make sure you celebrate them to give yourself some gratitude. And then think about what challenges are present in the business that you'd like to focus on for the next 12 weeks, and then write them down basically, and revisit them in 12 weeks' time. Like, put a plan in place, of course.
Yeah.
But I would say just keep it to one or two things as well. If you just achieve one thing that moves your business forward more than anything else, then that's more important to focus on than a to-do list of 370 items. I don't even have a to-do list. It's not important. I just work on one thing at a time.
Yeah.
And I create systems to deal with anything else.
Yeah. That's great advice. Yeah, my business coach would love you too. You know, quarterly plans and reviews within.
Well, we don't call them quarterly. I think it's important to make them 12 weekly.
12 weeks, all right.
Because quarterly still implies that it's annual, and it's too long. And I think 12 weekly is, and there's a book about it as well. 12 week year gives you 4 opportunities a year to get yourself in tune. It's like feedback.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for that. Great advice. Yeah. So what do you see as the future for you and all of your businesses?
More of the same. I think just doing more of what I'm doing now. It's always refining the I want better quality posts. I want to be more impactful with my audience. You know, better solutions. I think those things are the creative side now. It's sort of like the challenge, how much more can I optimize what I'm doing, and how can I feel better? How can I feel good about what I'm doing on an even higher level? And I think it's, it'd be great, maybe idealistic, but it'd be good to not ever have anyone leave a subscription because they're getting what they want. So considering, you know, all things aside, like correct customer filtering or whatever, it's just tuning the machine more to the next stage.
Yeah. Okay. And obviously you're in a place that you're really happy, and, you know, going out surfing each day, that's fabulous. I know I'm a keen bike rider, so I'd love to go out riding each day. In fact, I try.
Why don't you?
I do. I normally do. This week I haven't because it's been too cold of a morning.
Well, that's a self-inflicted
that's right.
reason. Yeah, yeah. So that's fine. But yeah, no, I mean, it started off as a snowflake and I've rolled it into a snowball and it's gathering momentum. Yeah. So I think even just doing what I'm doing, it's still going to be different by the time it gets to the bottom of that mountain.
Yeah. And of course, things are changing all the time on the internet. So there's going to be new stuff coming along that will be new tools or have to force you to change the way you do things on the internet so that you'll be able to help people with those.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Hmm. All right, well, let's get back to the competition. As I mentioned, I'm going to give away a prize of a copy of the book, The Automatic Customer by John Warrilow. And I think I mentioned earlier, he does run a podcast called Built to Sell Radio, which is quite well worth listening to. I've heard a couple of those. They're really good.
You know why he set that up, right?
No.
Because he enjoyed being on my podcast so much.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then he asked me how to do it and what resources, and I helped him out. And I'm really thrilled to see him getting into the podcasting.
Well, there you go. So something I didn't know. So well done, James. So John wrote this book, The Automatic Customer, which I've just finished reading. I'm going through it again, actually. He describes, and I can't remember how many, I think there's about 18 or so different models of subscription model, and he breaks them down and looks at their strengths and their weaknesses and looks at how you might set them up and where they might be applicable. It's a really good read. So, James, what would you like? So I asked the audience to contribute something in the comments of the blog post. So what would you like them to tell you, or, you know, is there something you can learn from their experience?
Well, they could ask me anything they want, but also it'd be good to know what one thing they would do as a result of listening to this podcast. Just one thing.
Okay.
What one thing would they commit to executing that will put them in a better position than they were at before they started listening to this podcast?
Okay, that's a really good one. Yeah, excellent. So leave a comment underneath the video and tell James what one thing you've taken out of this podcast that you're going to execute in your business or in your life that is going to make a difference for you as a result.
Or even better, the one thing they have executed as a result of this.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Even better.
You know, because they could weasel out of the promise to do it. It's easy to talk. Show us your actions.
Yeah. Okay. So we need you to post what you have executed, and you can kind of post a screenshot or a video of whatever it
I'll take your word for it. But I love that, and it's one of my podcasts is the whole thing is case studies. It's what people actually did, and it's so great to see ideas get executed, because that's the real value in it, is the execution. I'd love to see what positive change came from the episode. That would be a good investment of your time and our time.
Okay, that's great. So I'll get James to come back in a couple of weeks and have a look at the responses there. We might have to give it a little bit longer in terms of the execution part. But maybe I'll even throw in a couple of.
You might write down that you rode your bike once a day for a whole week.
Yeah. Well, no, that wouldn't really be a stretch for me. All right. Well, James, it's been fabulous to have you on the podcast. I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot. I hope the audience has as well. Before we go, a couple of final questions. What's the number one piece of advice you'd give anyone that in business that wants to be a leader in innovation and be more productive in what they're doing?
Well, to be a leader, my advice would be a leader. A lot of people seem to take a following role too easily. If you want to lead, then lead. Mm. Put out the best information in your marketplace. Have good pricing. Attend the most important trade fairs and be a leader in your arena. Get on the top 10 shows in your marketplace. Have content published in the right journals. So if you want to be a leader. Yeah. What was the second part of that?
That's it. Leader in innovation and productivity.
Yeah, then lead.
Yeah, that's great advice. All right, and finally, who would you like to see me interview on the podcast and why?
It's really not up to me. Interview whoever you want. I would say I'd like you to interview someone that would make you happy, that would be good value for your customers, whoever that would be.
Okay, well, we've got a list. We're working on that list.
You should ask John Murillo on. He's a good interview guest.
Yeah, well, John, I might come and contact you and see if we can get you on the podcast. That would be great, yeah. Thanks, James. All right, so where can people reach out and say thank you for all that you've shared with us today? It's been almost an hour, and it's been fabulous.
Well, you know, as you know, I'm on Twitter, at James Schramko. I've also got superfastbusiness.com. On any of the podcasts and posts, there's a comment section if someone wants to get involved. And of course, I'd love them to come into membership where I'd be helping them on their own business.
Yep. All right. And we'll post all those links underneath this video on the blog post so that people can follow up on that. So James, again, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today. It's been absolutely fascinating. As I said, I've learned a lot. I hope the audience learns a lot too with this, and we look forward to publishing this. So thanks.
Thanks, Jürgen.
Bye. Well, what a fascinating interview, full of valuable insights, lessons, and ideas for all of us. I hope you enjoyed meeting James as much as I enjoyed interviewing him and learnt lots from this episode. All the show notes for this episode will be at innovabiz.com.au/James Schramko. That is JamesSchramko. All lowercase, all one word, no funny hieroglyphics, innovabiz.com.au/James Schramko. So we'll have all the links, links to everything that we spoke about in this episode underneath the video. Remember, leave your comments underneath that video for your chance to win a copy of The Automatic Customer by John Warrilow. Leave your comments and tell James and me, of course, as well, the one thing that you've changed or executed as a result of something you've learned during this episode. I'll get James to swing by in a few weeks' time and award that prize. Now, James suggested, with a little bit of prompting, of course, that I interview John Warrilow, the author of The Automatic Customer and the host of Built to Sell Radio podcast, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, John, keep your eye on your inbox or on Twitter. We'll see if we can connect somehow, and I'll look to get you onto the InnovaBuzz podcast and talk to you about the automatic customer and all things associated with the subscription business model. Really looking forward to that one. So thank you everyone for listening or viewing this Innova Buzz podcast. In fact, hot off the presses, after James and I concluded the interview, we actually talked about the value of doing it in video format or audio. And I think in future, we may actually drop this back to audio. So let me have your feedback on that. I'd certainly be interested to hear from the audience as to what you think is the value added by video, or if there is no value, then tell us that as well. Now, we'd love you to review this podcast because reviews certainly help us to get found more easily, and your feedback, of course, helps us to improve as well. So head on over to iTunes or Stitcher, whichever your favorite medium is to access these podcasts. And while you're there, please subscribe so that you'll never miss a future episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. And remember, if you don't innovate, you'll stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep on innovating.